The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends? I'm just trying to make you a little extra money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate, teach. Call me at 1-800-743-CBC. Tweet me at Jim Cramer. Whenever there's a big trend, everybody always wants to play the silly game of trying to figure out what inning it's in. What inning are we with the weight loss drugs? Hey, how about with the electric vehicles? Or maybe with the Fed's next move? Could be the seventh there. We're clearly in the final inning of the Nelson Peltz proxy fight for a board seat or two at Walt Disney because Peltz didn't get the votes. But he could pick up a cool billion in profit. Good investment, all things considered. But the inning game that bothers me the most is what inning are we in the artificial intelligence boom. For the last few days, we've seen everything coming down in the AI space. Now people are arguing that because of the declining stock prices, we're in the late innings of this story. Perhaps it was all overdone to begin with. Fortunately, that wasn't enough to do that much damage today. Dow only slipping 43 points. S&P was up 0.11%. NASDAQ gained 0.23%, much stronger at one point today. But still, with the bellwether of AI, NVIDIA, now down from its high of 974 to 889. Down another $4.88 today. We're now being told that NVIDIA's GTC conference and its exciting range of supercomputers just old hot. It's been replaced by the golden age of refining, sending stocks like Marathon, Pete, and Valero soaring. Oh, there's tech. Oh, it's the golden age of the dollar stores, with Dollar General and Dollar Tree both on fire. Despite reporting weak quarters this month, Dollar Tree's got a great candy aisle. We're hearing even that Chippy and Autocado, those two Chipotle robots, they're in the seventh inning stretch. Move over, NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang. It's all about the oils and the golds. They've got the mojo. Mojo per share. To which I say, hold it. Enough already. When you hear all this inning talk and the accompanying bubble chatter, it's clear that lots of investors have no idea what AI is, let alone generative AI, or what it'll be used for, let alone how its adoption represents a genuine industrial revolution, right up there with the steam engine. In fairness, the reason they have no idea is because we really haven't even seen anything transformative in the AI camp just yet, or at least nothing that's all that visible. It's true that artificial intelligence has suffused the design, changed sales tactics for Salesforce, or onboarding for ServiceNow. There's no doubt that inference has influenced you to buy certain products on Amazon that you might otherwise not have known about. You may have stuck, you'd be with Instagram or Reels because of ultra-fast speed for video. Dell will make money connecting you to the NVIDIA world. Dell actually wore, by the way, to a new all-time high today. People remember that it's doing very well. But in terms of innings, I don't think the AI game has even started yet because the tech's still too slow to matter. The big gun computers that Jensen Huang rolled out, the ones that we saw when we were out there, they won't be in the data center until the fall. So let me tell you some of the things I see that are off the beaten track. They tell me AI is still in the batting practice stage, only for those who feel they need warming up. First, one of the best uses for AI is replacing humans to do repetitive jobs, what we used to call dead-end jobs, and that includes Chippy and Autocado. Now, I saw an autonomous forklift at the GTC that never breaks down and will one day be able to replace any human, except for it's actually more like replacing multiple humans, because it can operate 24-7. It can see around the corner. It ain't going to stumble. I saw a machine that was desperately trying to pick up a box, but couldn't because the box was actually too close to the end of an invisible wall, so the robot arm knew not to go near it. The next iteration would never be deterred by that, could pick up pretty much anything, and that's coming. maybe a year from now, maybe shorter. I saw a robot bartender who could make me one of just three drinks, and they were mocktails. It was, you know, look, it's a machine that can't be programmed yet to do everything a real bartender would, because the current NVIDIA chip that powers it can't process all that. But the next one might be able to. I wanted to know if they could program the bartender to make a drink shaken or stirred in homage to James Bond. Robot exec said it's pretty much just a matter of time, especially if you can show it the right videos. Anything I can do, it can do better. How about a robot playing sports? The new ones that aren't out yet will be able to pitch a perfect game every time simply by watching videos of pitchers that have won perfect games, then matching those against what deficiencies the hitters have, again, by looking at the videos. Consider AI to mean that a robot will be able to do anything physical that a person can do, which allows that person to do literally anything else. I do not think AI will crush jobs in the aggregate, although it may replace a lot of undesirable jobs. We're coming from a world where those few who can code have an unassailable edge on everybody else. AI can level the playing field. Because these computers understand the spoken word, not just hard-to-learn code that you have to go to get a computer science degree to do. Sure, we won't need as many forklift operators, but you know what? Right now, we don't have enough people to do these many jobs in the first place. Don't forget, we still have a labor shortage in this country, and in many cases, wages are more expensive than most businesses would like or can even afford. Many other countries, by the way, have low birth rates, and they, too, need these machines. I experienced this in my old restaurants. Nobody wanted to do some of the jobs except the prices that made the restaurants operate at a loss. You didn't think of AI as a tool to start a business that you couldn't otherwise start. Okay, think about it like that. So, yes, we'll lose some jobs, but we'll also get more business formation that spurs new hiring that I think will exceed the lost jobs. The most difficult aspects of generative AI and large language models have to do with our inability to grasp what can actually be changed here. Other than a few very imaginative people who can think about what super speed might mean to computing, people like Jensen Huang and his colleagues at NVIDIA, we lack the ability to comprehend what the robots can really do or what we can do if we're able to directly ask computers questions that we can't even think of now. We just aren't there yet. Because to see this, you need to be a visionary. Jensen can see the future out 10 years. That's all we talk about when I'm out there. Most of us have a hard time seeing things out 10 minutes. Which brings me all the way back to the stock market. We heard on Squawk Box today that Mets owner and legendary hedge fund manager Steve Cohen believes that AI cycle could be in 1995, not 2000. So, of course, what happens? People go crazy and they buy Dell up 8, they buy Broadcom up 2, these percentages. We decided to go back to some micro, to super micro. We go back to Micron, but not Intel because it blew up again, this time underestimating losses from the semiconductor foundry strategy it has. In this sense, the trajectory of artificial intelligence is similar to the trajectory of the PC. When Intel went from 386 to 486, we figured, okay, it's over. Who needs anything more powerful than that? Turns out we all needed the next generation of Pentium. We just didn't know yet. Bottom line, when it comes to AI, it's like the 286 is out. We're scoffing at the possibility of the 386 and the 486 down the road. Aren't we already going fast enough? My view, no! We aren't going fast enough because we just learned how to crawl. There could be a real riot when we stand up and learn to walk to the ballpark to catch batting practice, or maybe our national anthem. Let's go to Tyler in California. Tyler.
Big booyah from California. How you doing, Jim?
I like the sound of this, Tyler. What do you got going for me?
Based on 2001 tech bubble numbers, what is your price target for ARM?
Well, my partner, Jeff Marks and I talk a lot about price targets. We do not have one for ARM, but I do think that over time, I think that Rene Haas is just fabulous as a CEO, and I would buy that stock easily up 25 to 30 points without a problem. That's where I think the stock could head without it. Was at 164. It can go up some more. Michael in Virginia. Michael.
Booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Michael.
I've been watching you for years.
Thank you.
Last month, March 4th. I started to purchase shares of Zoetis around 187. I noticed that it's been trading down for about a month now. I'm down 13% in my initial position that I took. I've been building a position as we go along over the last month. I'm trying to figure out why the stock continues to pull back and should I buy more?
Okay, I think it's because of Merck Animal Health. I think Merck Animal Health is doing incredibly well. I do believe that Merck has a lot of competitive products to them, and that does matter. I also think that IDEX Labs is doing better. I don't think Zoetis is a sale here, but understand that Merck is a very powerful company. It's doing a lot of things right, and particularly in animal health. Let's go to Trey in Texas. Trey.
Jim, I bought a Ford Ranger pickup truck, and let me tell you, this beast is perfect for delivering pizzas and picking up groceries. That said, I'll probably buy a Chevy truck if I ever need some real payload. Speaking of payload, is GM a buy?
I like GM very much, and the buyback is formidable, and I think the buyback has made it so that it's become a very good stock on any weakness. I have to tell you, I have the Ford Maverick, and I absolutely love it, and I had the Super Duty, and I think it's terrific, and I do think that that stock is going higher, too, because we saw some fabulous numbers. Go listen to what Phil LeBeau had to say about hybrids. It's all Ford's time. All right, look, when it comes to advancing AI, some may say we're going fast enough. In my view, we're just learning how to crawl, and there could be a real riot if we stand up and learn how to walk to the stadium. Oh, man, money tonight. CSX, holy cow,
all aboard,
has set up a special route from Baltimore to NYC to manage the impact of the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse. I'm hearing more about that and about safety when it comes to the rails. Then the small caps have caught fire as of late. So could that opportunity remain in the cohort, or has it moved too much? I'm digging into the details. And from blenders to vacuums, Shark Ninja has a place in your home, but should have a place in your portfolio. I'm sitting down with the company's CEO to get the latest in the story. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With the Port of Baltimore potentially closed for months in wake of the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse, it was a little over a week ago. What's that mean for East Coast railroads? CSX services 26 states east of the Mississippi River, and they help export a massive amount of coal through Baltimore, so they could take a hit. They also do a lot of auto from there. For now, though, they've rerouted their Baltimore cargo to New York or New Jersey, but obviously it's less efficient. Still, the stock's barely been dinged since the bridge collapse, so is the market simply not taking this disruption seriously, or is cooler heads prevailed, and CSX knows how to handle it. Let's check in with Joe Hinrichs. He's the president and CEO of CSX, who joins us now from one of his company's inspection trains in Ohio. Joe, welcome back to Mad Money, and what the heck are you doing there?
Hey, Jim, having a great time. Riding on the observation car with our leadership team, getting to see our network right here in the Buckeye State in Ohio. And I got to give you a little horn, just like you get to do a shout-out for you there.
Oh, if only I were seven. because I used to put pennies on the line, on the CSX train line. I put a penny and watch it go
by.
That.
That's not a good thing. Don't do that.
Okay, but no, I stopped doing that about 62 years ago, Joe, but I understand the sentiment. All right, so, Joe, obviously, you are involved in every aspect of the railroad. Before I get to the questions, I want to ask you, is this a typical job for the guy who's the CEO of CSX, or do you feel like you should be there front line?
Well, our operations team spends a lot of time out on the road, as you might imagine, inspecting, talking to our employees. And I try to get out with them once in a while, stop at the yard, see our employees, and see the network, and learn about our customers and everything that's going on. And of course, I'm 18 months in, so I'm still learning. And the team is teaching me a lot about the railroads. So you got to be out here to see it.
Okay, now, I also know you know the customers well. You have Port of Baltimore, which I know you're doing everything to try to help. But I also... the largest auto area. You're from that particular customer base. What are you doing to help customers in the autos?
Yeah, you know, Jim, we're obviously a tragedy at Francis Scott Key Bridge. We're praying for the families of those affected. Talked to Governor Moore this morning. He's really excited about the unified command, how the federal, state, and local government officials have come together. Progress is being made. We're taking care of our customers. The auto customers are finding other ramps to go to, and I think we're going to be in good shape there. On the containers, intermodal, we're doing a lot of creative things, as you mentioned earlier, going from New York, New Jersey, down to Baltimore. Coal is one of the challenges we have, of course, because we export a lot of coal out of the Baltimore port. We'll work with our customers there to reroute and target some other areas. And so I think the reason why people aren't responding, the market is responding favorably, is we're finding solutions. We have a great team. Work with our customers to find new solutions.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned coal. Coal's kind of a conundrum. If we're going to reindustrialize, we're going to have these data centers go up 5% a year, then we're going to need coal, particularly when, say, on a total eclipse of the sun that's coming up April 8th. But solar does not have the juice on that day. Is coal making a bizarre comeback, if you include India?
It really is, Jim. Matter of fact, the world used more coal last year than it has ever in its history. A lot of that is what Eastern Europe and especially India need for both concrete and steel production, but of course also for thermal capacity. And as you said, all the energy needs we have from data centers to electric vehicles, coal is a supplemental resource being used to help the utilities make that power for the near term. You know, it's in secular decline over time on the thermal side, but the metallurgical coal is growing. On the export side, it's growing heavily over the last several years, and we export a lot of coal from the United States, which really helps our people in Kentucky and West Virginia and Alabama and a lot of those mines across the country.
Well, are these other countries scrambling to get another source of coal, and are people going to lose it?
Well, I think there's enough, you know, there's enough in the pipeline for now as long as we find new solutions, and we're working really hard. I'm really proud of our team. We sent a request out for our employees to transfer to new locations to be able to help supplement resources to move the coal, and we had a lot of people sign up to do that, and that's a tribute to our employees on our One CSX team. But we're finding new solutions. Yeah, there may be a little bit of effect in April, but we'll find new solutions. And of course, I'm anxious for the port to get back open for deep sea vessels.
But no, you just to give a little granularity here, you just switched tracks. I think it was obviously well advised, given the fact that there was another train coming the other way. Now, are you, good that's working, obviously. But I mean, are this the kind of thing you're inspecting, is to be sure that the off ramps are good and checking pure safety, right?
So all the switches, all the signals, also the cleanliness of the yard, frankly, and how we're taking care of the track, the ballast, just looking at everything, how smooth the ride is, too. You want, obviously, to be seamless. Look for anything that has to do with safety first, of course, then how we treat our customers. Obviously, looking for inventory, too, if we see ties on the side or if we see cars. Just looking for everything you can to see how efficient the railroad is and how safe it is, but also just a chance to bond and spend time together. When you're on a train for, 24 hours, you sleep on the train, you get a chance to spend a lot of quality time talking about our operation and really building the team together to serve our customers.
Well, how about these new rules? Do you have two people in the at the front now? Is that okay? I know CSX has historically been technological leader. Don't know whether you needed two in terms of what technology has been able to do, but obviously for safety, people feel it's necessary.
Yeah, I mean, the AAR has come out and said, there's no direct correlation of data that says, how many people in the crew in the cab actually associated with safety. But at CSX, we haven't been pushing for a reduction of the two-person crews. There's a conductor and an engineer in the train. The engineer drives the train, the conductor kind of takes care of the train. And we think that's a good setup for now. In the future, technology may allow for that to change. And we don't believe there should be, inordinate amount of rulemaking done by our administrators and regulators to do that. It should be held by our negotiation with our unions. But for now, we're very clear. We're staying with two-person crews. We're focused on our safety and on serving our customers. And over time, technology may allow for new opportunities, but that's out there in the future.
All right, last question. You are able to see more than anyone whether there really is a reindustrialization in the nation or if it's something temporary. What is your take, particularly with the Southeast, about our country coming back in terms of industrialization?
Jim, it's happening. We have over 500 projects on our network happening right now, shovels in the ground, buildings being built, new projects coming to the, not the Southeast, but a little bit of the lower Midwest as well, on our network, new projects, steel, aluminum, batteries, electric vehicles, you name it, aggregates, forest products, you name it, it's happening. And we're proud and fortunate to be in the Southeast where a lot of this is happening. But we're seeing it, Jim, and it's coming to life. And between this year and the next couple of years, you're going to see a lot of that activity come to fruition.
Well, look, I'm really thrilled about what you did in Baltimore. I know people were very concerned that it would take years, but it looks like it's just a matter of just a couple of days. And that's Joe Hinrichs. He's the president and CEO of CSX, who's obviously coming from a darn train. Hey, Joe, great to see you.
Good to see you, Jim.
All right, be safe. We try to bring you everything we can here on Mad Money. Back after the break.
Coming up, sweat the small stuff. Are sluggish small caps due for a big turnaround? Cramer has more next.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
It's now been nearly 18 months since the market bottomed in October of 2022 and the current bull market began. During this period, the Dow's rallied nearly 37% from its lows. S&P's up 49%. NASDAQ shot up 61%. But there is one really big group that's had a different trajectory. I'm talking about the small caps. When you look at the best proxy for the group, that's the Russell 2000, it didn't actually bottom until October of last year, a full 12 months after the major benchmarks. Since then, it has indeed caught fire, climbing a quick 27%. That matters. But while that's roughly in line with the other major averages, the Russell 2000 still got a lot of room to play catch-up, given how much the Dow or the S&P or the NASDAQ had already gained over the previous year. In fact, the small-cap index remains down more than 15% from its all-time high in November of 2021, when the market was still in love with ultra-speculative stocks. Meanwhile, the big benchmarks were hitting new all-time highs repeatedly here. They've been where the excitement is, not the small caps. So why have small cap stocks lagged everything else? And could maybe some of them be worth buying now that they're finally beginning to rebound? Let's start with what delayed this move. First, there's the composition of the Russell 2000. For the past year and a half, we know that this market's been mainly led by tech stocks. And the Russell 2000 simply has much less tech exposure than the S&P 500, and to say nothing of the NASDAQ. The S&P is almost 30% tech right now. Well, of course, the tech has shot up as being a percentage. Russell 2000 is just 13%, 30 versus 13. In reality, the S&P is even more tech heavy than that. But Meta Platforms and Alphabet are technically classified as part of the communication services sector, not tech. And Amazon is classified as a consumer discretionary play, not tech. If you add just those three stocks to the tech category, guess what? The S&P is closer to 40% tech. Meanwhile, the Russell 2000 is heavy on some groups that have struggled during this period, like how about the regional banks, which had a very tough time after Silicon Valley Bank collapsed, and the mini bank crisis that followed. Russell 2000 also has a lot of biotech companies, and those struggled for most of 2022 and much of 2023, too. This market didn't want regional banks and it didn't want speculative biotechs. People were losing too much money. Second, and more important, small caps tend to underperform in a higher interest rate environment. These smaller companies are the ones that most need to raise money. And for over a decade after the Great Recession, they were pretty much in heaven because they could borrow for next to nothing. But as the Fed began to raise rates aggressively, ultimately taking them to their highest levels in over 15 years, it became much more expensive for the small caps to borrow money and much more difficult to lock up alternative sources of funding. Stock market closed to them. And that's why the Russell 2000 finally bottomed once long-term interest rates peaked last October. It's why the index rallied like crazy in November and December. And it's also why the index has stalled out year to date. Long rates have started to climb again. So we talk about that a lot in the morning. I don't talk about it enough in the evening. Rates are going up. So why even contemplate picking up some small cap stocks? Like I told you, the small caps are hostage to interest rates, and I still think the ultimate direction for rates this year is going to be lower. I'm betting we'll get some rate cuts in 2024, maybe one or even two. Remember, I am in the camp that says the economy is humming strongly. And once the process of rate cuts begins, then Wall Street will be willing to look at the small caps again in a very favorable light. Some market strategists I respect already believe the small caps are ready to make a nice move here. First is Tom Lee, head of global research for Fundstrat, who's been very bullish on the overall market for a while now, so therefore he's right. About 2 weeks ago, Lee came on CNBC's Last Call, where he predicted that the Russell 2000 could climb some 50% this year, basically saying the small cap index should go from around 2000, where it is now, to above 3000. I want to be in on that. Lee argued that the long-term underperformance of small caps might mean that they're due for what's known as a mean reversal, pointing out that the small caps, in the aggregate and on the relative basis, are now valued as cheaply as they were in 1999, which was before the group had an extended performance of outperformance. A lot of this comes down to the Fed, though. As long as they're not raising interest rates, he expects more mergers, and once the Fed starts cutting, the regional banks could get a real boost. Remember, the Tusk 2000 is weighed down with regional banks. We get another vote of small cap confidence from an old friend, Brian Belsky, the chief investment strategist at BMO Capital Markets. He's another expert who was very bullish on the way up, even as he's gotten a little more cautious in the market of late. Last week, Belsky published a note where he presented a very bullish case for small caps and mid caps. He says both groups are oversold. He thinks their earnings are turning a corner here. And unlike the large caps, their valuations are extremely attractive. These are much cheaper, my view. I think this thesis is pretty sound. Looking back at this bull market, it's fair to say that some of the best names, the stocks that have done the heavy lifting to push us higher over the last 18 months, have gotten bid up a little too much. It wouldn't surprise me if some other groups that haven't done as well, like the small caps, now pick up the mantle and have their own period of outperformance. I keep telling you that the bull market has been broadened, right? Meaning less Magnificent Seven, more everything else. The Magnificent Seven is a donor to the Russell 2000. In particular, the small caps can work if interest rates do indeed head lower this year. Of course, that feels like less of a certainty than it did a few months ago or even a couple of weeks ago. And I'm aware that lower rates are less likely if inflation continues to stay stubborn in certain areas, like housing, like insurance, or even some commodities. But at this point, I believe the Federal Reserve is done tightening. And the only questions are when they will start cutting rates and how many rate cuts they'll ultimately have this year. The moment Jay Powell blesses us with rate cuts, the small caps should indeed catch fire, which means you need some exposure to this group beforehand, or else you're going to miss the move. And that is why, starting tonight, we're going to be running a series on the best small cap stocks. Tomorrow, I'm going to get specific. I'll give you more small cap picks for the next few days after that. The plan is to go sector by sector, looking at the groups that are most heavily weighted in the Russell 2000, the industrials, the healthcare, the financials, tax, consumer discretionary. Bottom line, stay tuned throughout the end of the week and into next week, because I'll be doling out some of my best ideas in the undervalued small cap space over the next several shows. And hopefully at the end, you'll have a real nice shopping list to choose from. Let's go to Miles in Louisiana. Miles.
Hey, Jim. A big booyah from New Orleans. Had a question on Domino's Pizza. Given the effectiveness and popularity of the GLP-1 weight loss drugs, is Domino's still appetizing? Thanks.
Well, okay, so Domino's I regard as being a kind of almost like beer, social. It's a social food. People like to get it together, and it's also very inexpensive. And you can also, by the way, have tomato pie, which is what I do with my kids. It's fabulous. It just says no cheese. But most importantly, this is a guy named Russell Weiner has re-energized this company. It hit an all-time high today. And I think even though it sells at 32 times earnings, that this is going to be one of the best stocks for a while. So maybe you buy some here and then wait for it to come down because you don't want to buy all at once and when a stock is at its high. Ian in North Carolina. Ian.
Jimbo, how are you, sir?
How you doing?
Not too bad at all. Every day is a holiday.
All right. I like that. Good attitude. Very positive. What's going on?
Yeah. Hey, I once heard an analyst from Morgan Stanley say that rare earth materials were the mother of all CapEx cycles, but MP Materials is down big since April of 2022. Is it still a savvy long-term investment?
I think James Lutinsky's doing a very good job. I know they've got some good robots there. They've been able to use them. I've been looking at AI and who's got it. Now, I would say, obviously, it's going in the wrong direction, and people are concerned about EVs. But it's not been a good investment, candidly, but it is a good company. Now, it's hard to rationalize good investment, good company. But I will say this, you're certainly not getting in at a high price. All right, we don't know exactly when we will start cutting rates, right? We just have an idea. But when they do, I think it's the small caps who are going to have a nice time, including a stock like MP Materials, frankly. Much more Mad Money ahead. Trying to get a read on the impact social media has on retail, look no further than SharkNinja. I'm hearing how the company's meeting the needs of consumers through the use of TikTok and beyond. And speaking of the consumer, Ulta had investors worried about spending today. But are the concerns warranted? I'm going to give you my take. And I got to tell you, it's not the same that you heard. And a lawyer calls rapid fire tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer. All right, last year, a consumer products company called SharkNinja very quietly listed their shares in the New York Stock Exchange. Now, you know them for their Shark brand cleaning products or maybe their Ninja brand kitchen appliances. They're all over Costco. At first, it didn't get much attention. But over the past 8 months, SharkNinja's stock has more than doubled from its debut, climbing from the mid-20s at its lows in early August to the low 60s today. And the stock's running for good reason, as the underlying company's now posted two very strong quarters that brought in a lot of new investors. Still, that's a monster move, so I'm a little worried because they do have a Chinese former parent company, still owns more than half the business. If they decide to sell a ton of the shares, that could hurt. But this has been a great untold story, and I want to drill down on it. So let's go straight to the source with Mark Barocas. He's the CEO of SharkNinja to learn more about this situation. Barocas, welcome to Mad Money.
Thanks so much, Jim, for having me.
I have, when we heard, when people said SharkNinja's on, not as much excitement in years as this company. And so I'm going to give you the floor for a second because this has taken the country by storm. Yeah.
Well, look, SharkNinja is a consumer products innovation powerhouse. And we go to market, as you said, with the Shark brand and the Ninja brand, two multi-billion dollar brands that we, you know, delight consumers every day and solve problems for them. We help them clean faster. We help them cook easier. We help them feel more beautiful. And we help them spend more quality time. You know, the business, I started running the business 16 years ago.
16? I did not know that. Okay, I should have known that.
And in the last 16 years, you know, we've grown our revenue from $200 million to nearly $4.3 billion last year. We're a highly profitable business. We've generated strong organic growth. The company has grown over the last 15 years at a compounded annual growth rate of 20% a year during that period of time.
Well, how do you know what people want? And then are you guys tinkerers? Because when I went through the deck and saw everything, there's a lot of things I didn't know that I needed. But it turns out I did.
If you were to come to our offices, Jim, in Boston, just outside of Boston, it's the Willy Wonka of product innovation.
Right.
We're in 31 different product categories. We sell in 26 different markets. We sell everything from what you see here, our Ninja Creamy Ice Cream Maker, to our Shark Cordless Vacuum, to our Shark Flex Style. You know, consumers have multiple products of ours in their home. And I think what's exciting now by being a publicly listed company is they're now understanding the company behind those products.
Now, let's understand that you do some that you've invented, absolutely. Some that are, my parents' generation were called knockoffs. I would say that offer better value, unless someone does, you know, a mousetrap that's so far superior. It's just, it's a mixture of both. How do you define your own company's product?
Well, it starts really with identifying a known or unknown consumer problem. Okay. We take those proprietary insights and we turn them into disruptive product innovation that we think we do better than anyone else. We do it with incredible speed. We have 800 engineers around the globe that work on a 24/7 innovation cycle. We have engineers in Boston. When they go to sleep, the CAD passes to China. They work on it. The CAD passes to London. They work on it. It helps us bring products to market in as fast as 12 months. Well, we have market-leading performance of our products, high-quality, reliable products. Our products have the most five-star ratings online.
Well, I was going to ask you about ratings, in that my generation, we talk Consumer Reports, this new generation, which I regard as being a much smarter, more sophisticated generation, has TikTok.
Yeah.
And that does as well?
Jim, the consumer has so much power today.
Right, okay.
When back 16 years ago when we started, you opened up Consumer Reports and they told you the 10 vacuum cleaners to buy. Okay. There was a store when I was growing up in New York called Sims. It was the educated consumer was our best customer. The consumer today is more educated than they've ever been. They go online, they create organic, user-generated content, but there's been an evolution. It's gone from the online review 10 years ago, to the Facebook group, to now today, the TikTok or the Instagram post.
Now, I want people to understand what percentage of things are made in China, which, you know, look, we know that they have the Chinese cars are cheaper, better. I mean, I'm willing to accept if it's cheaper and better, I'm all in. How much? What percentage?
So our supply chain has really diversified over the last 5 years. So we today make about 2/3 of our product in China and about 1/3 of our product outside of China, primarily in Southeast Asia.
Okay. Now, let's go over, say, pricing. In some cases, yes, you're going to be head-to-head against a company called Dyson. There's theoretically a product, a cordless vacuum might be 500, Dyson maybe 280, you guys. What do you hear about what the customer, how do you, as a person who's been at this for 16 years, think of the one price versus the other, snob versus not snob, better versus not as good? Just give me your reflection.
Well, look, I think the way we think about it is we're in business to create affordable, accessible innovation. That's what we're all about. We sell to everyone. We want to sell to everyone in the market. Our products are sold at every retailer from Walmart all the way up to Sephora and Ulta and everyone in between. So I don't necessarily think about it in terms of that we're only trying to develop products for a uber, expensive consumer. I mean, we want to develop products for everyone. I mean, that's what I think is so exciting about the Shark and Ninja brands. We're not the highest priced products in the market. We're not the lowest price, but we move the opening price consumer up into our brands, and we're also the brand of choice for the premium consumer.
Well, it is rather remarkable. I wish we had more time. I have a couple of things I want to ask you. The Chinese majority ownership, recent secondary offering, do they want to sell the position down? I know that's not up to you, but do they envision not owning any Shark Ninja, or you can't give us any insight to what they're thinking?
I don't know that they believe in the long-term value of Shark Ninja. I mean, this is a business that has grown organically. Jim, we've never acquired a dollar of revenue in the company's history. All of that growth that I mentioned to you is all product innovation that we've developed ourselves, expanding into new product categories, expanding into new geographies. And I think there's a lot of white space for us to continue to keep going.
Well, you have something new every month? You have something new? How often do you have something new? Or is this when it's ready, obviously? But
We launch 25 new products a year. We've done that year after year after year. 25 new products a year.
I mean, a Whirlpool might, I don't want to disparage anyone, but that's an unusual and exciting order, a new product way to do it. I mean, that's pretty organic.
It is.
Most organic I've ever heard.
It is.
Well, got to hand it to you. That is Mark Barocas. Yes, it's Shark Ninja, and I've got him on, and I've got to tell you, in my house, not that much, but in my daughter's house, it's Shark Ninja, period. It's like an aquarium / whatever. Good to meet you.
Great to meet you.
Hey, buddy, back in from the break.
Thanks so much.
When we return, master the markets one stock at a time. The Lightning Round is up next.
And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready, Steve? Dad, cover the light round. Clippers and brother, start with Steve in New Jersey. Steve.
Hello, Jim. How are you doing today?
I am doing well, Steve. How about you?
Oh, very good. Thank you. First, I'd like to thank you for all the teachings that I've learned from you over the years.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. My question is, regarding a recent position I took in Nextracker, I noticed it got downgraded, and its competitor, Arate Technologies, got upgraded. Well, I was looking at some of the numbers that I had on there.
I got to tell you, Steve, I read that downgrade. I think Nextracker's good. I think Shug came on recently. He tells a good story. I thought it was just someone just trying to make a little noise. I would be a buyer of that stock right here at 52. Let's go to Matt in New York. Matt.
Hey, Jim, big booyah from Matt out in upstate New York. How you doing?
I am doing well, Matt. Thank you for calling. What's happening?
Not much. Calling in regards to a portfolio hold of mine, Poplar Inc., ticker symbol BPOP.
It's okay. I mean, I've got to tell you, I'm a Wells Fargo guy for the Chapel Trust. I'm not backing away. I think that's got more room to run. Let's go to Deke in Pennsylvania. Deke.
Hey, Jim, booyah, buddy. What's up?
Not much. How are you, Deke? What's happening?
Hey, man, it's a lot of rain here. So I'm just trying to stay dry.
I hear you.
I bought Viper Energy some years back, and it had a pretty good dividend payout, and now it's shrunk down to nothing. But it's going up in cash value. What do you think I should do with that?
And what was the stock? I'm sorry.
Viper.
Viper's good stock. It's got a good yield, and it's got mineral rights. I think it's a really excellent idea right here, definitely given the fact that people think we're in an inflationary environment for the minerals and for oil. I think you got a good one. Let's go to Mike in Michigan. Mike.
Hey, Jim. This is Mike in Michigan. I wanted to get your thoughts on an oil play. This is High Peak, smaller company.
Oh, I like High Peak. You know, we did recommend it, then shot up instantly, and then it came back down. Actually, I'm quite surprised that it's this low, given the fact of where oil is. I'd like to buy High Peaks right here. Let's go to Katie in Florida. Katie.
Yes, I have two. Can I give you two? Okay, so one is a line, ALGN, and the second one is DJT.
DJT? Okay, a line. Look, I like a line. I think a line's pretty good. It's come down 100 points. It's not bad. And that's the one I go with. Let's go to Bob in South Carolina. Bob.
Hey, Jimbo. How you doing, buddy?
I am doing good. How about you, Bob?
Good. You're looking good. Listen, I bought this stock a week ago, and it's dropping like a rock. Lost $20 a share. Should I get out as Lowe's?
No. Marvin Ellison's doing a good job. Both stocks have been coming down. People feel that maybe the do-it-yourself guy has stayed away. That's not right. You don't want to sell this stock into what is basically the Christmas period, which is gardening. I do not want you to sell Lowe's right here. Let's go to Bill in New York. Bill.
Yes.
You're up,
yes.
Bill.
Okay. Is he going to talk to me right now?
Yeah, or? Bill, you're on. It's Jim.
Okay.
I'm speaking
okay.
to you.
Jim, I'm trying to find out some information on a company called GXO Logistics.
Yeah, I mean, a contract logistics operator. Now, we had Malcolm Wilson on a couple times. Yeah, I think it's okay. Look, I felt it was XPO, and when XPO was done, I said, fantastic, hallelujah, and moved on, and I have not looked back. Let's go to Bill in Illinois, please. Bill.
Hey, Jim, you're looking great, buddy. This is
Michael Billy, partner.
From Illinois. I've got some question for you on Norwegian Cruise Line.
Of course.
They came in to...
I think Norwegian Cruise is good. I think Royal is better. RCL is my guy. I'm sticking with RCL. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, cosmetics at first blush. The retail rival that has an old Kramer fave in search of a touch-up. Next.
We're hearing a lot about the consumer lately, but for the moment, I wish we weren't hearing anything. The consumer's strong. The consumer's weak. The consumer's how about politics? The consumer's worried about oil prices. The consumer, enough already. Sure, we're experiencing what could be a lull in spending, maybe. And that's what I see in the stock of Starbucks, where there's clearly an expectation of a better second half, which, by the way, is code for the first half's no good. Things have certainly been better at Ulta Beauty, as we found out today after their not-so-hot presentation at the J.P. Morgan Retail Roundup Conference sent the stock plummeting nearly $80. But Dave & Buster's last night put up better-than-expected numbers. Signet raised its earnings guidance substantially. And this guidance just tops what they gave 2 weeks ago. But then again, Signet's buying back the equivalent of 4.1 million shares. Big deal when you only have 45 million shares outstanding. So the earnings per share forecast gets boosted by the buyback. But it's still important because the stock had pulled back hard after that last quarter. RH, the old Restoration Hardware, well, hasn't been performing too well since its last quarter. But then again, it shot up 20% in the immediate aftermath of the quarter. It's digesting the gains. Levi's reported excellent numbers after the close this evening. Strong performance all the way around, which brings you to the conundrum of retail in general. As someone who's been steeped in retail from my parents, I know this is the least consequential period to make a judgment about the health of the consumer. They don't correlate. I think CEO Dave Kimball, the CEO of Ulta, he lowered the boom on his own stock today. He certainly made some cogent points about what he called societal factors when he talked about his firm's recent sales at the J.P. Morgan Retail Roundup. I want you to listen to this. He said, quote, economically, there's kind of mixed data points around the economic situation for the majority of consumers, with healthy employment rates, wage growth, but also pressures that we see with rising credit card debt, student loan dynamics, other pressures that we certainly see within our guests, end quote. Then he goes on, quote, we know what's going on in the world, whether it's some of the political challenges, global complex, and then our political environment here as we go through an election year, end quote, which he says creates a, quote, soup of activity. All right, I get all this. But to me, as I read through the Ulta conference call, I was struck by an obvious surge of competition from Kohl's, which has nameplated its Sephora stores within a store right below its own name. I think Ulta's suffering from more points of competition, which Dave did mention, and not the so-called soup of world events, which may account for some, but not all the underperformance. Here's where I come down, honestly. I simply don't believe anything of consequence is happening to the consumer as long as employment remains strong, because that's the true tell of spending. And we still got a 3.9% unemployment rate, and that's pretty fabulous. This is a noisy moment, but not one that should impact stocks. There's no new frugality. There's not a fear of losing jobs. There's no big holiday spending slowdown because there are no holidays. It's easy to extrapolate from instant information, but a lot of this stuff will mislead you because it's not big enough to move the needle. I say make the most informed judgments you can, but don't make snap judgments based on what amount to inconsequential events. I think Ulta's decline comes courtesy of a Kohl's is now run by Tom Kingsbury, a legend, a total heavy hitter who turned Burlington stores into the powerhouse of the discount space. I never thought of my Kohl's as a Sephora, but now Sephora's name is right next to Kohl's in the front of the store. And Sephora's great prices with, like, Ulta-like, terrific selection. And I got to tell you, Sephora has been a dominant player in this segment. I think these retail moves are pretty much happening at random. Wake me up on Friday when we get the labor report. If the numbers are strong, there's no reason to worry about the consumer. If the numbers are very weak, the Fed will cut rates and the consumer will get a boost. Good scenarios both. For now, nothing's changed. Even as people want to make something out of nothing. The soup, I say it's the competition. Politics, no impact. And spending, no holidays. So no changes. Leave it at that. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere. I promise I'll find it just for you right here on Mint Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you tomorrow. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.